every single time you turn on your kitchen tap, you are participating in this absolute miracle of modern engineering.
Oh, absolutely. It's something we completely take for granted.
Right. But it's also a system that is, honestly, leading to death.
Yeah, quite literally in some cases.
Exactly. Right now, major cities around the world are losing up to half of their perfectly clean drinking water directly into the dirt, like before it ever even reaches a single house.
Half. Which is just an unbelievable amount of waste when you think about the energy that goes into treating it.
It is wild.
Mm-hmm.
So today we are looking at the hidden systems that keep the water flowing for you and why that underground world beneath your feet is teetering on the brink of collapse.
The situation is incredibly precarious, honestly. We're working with a stack of sources today focused on this whole concept of urban water renewal.
Which is a fascinating concept.
It really is. We're looking at sustainable water solutions globally, but also unpacking some highly specific, really successful models coming out of South Africa.
Yeah, so the mission for our deep dive today is to decode why the old ways of managing urban water are, well, spectacularly failing us.
Right, because the traditional methods just aren't holding up anymore.
Exactly. We want to understand the mechanics of this crisis, but more importantly, how a radical shift in our entire philosophy of water is basically the only way to build resilient cities.
Because without that shift, we're just putting band-aids on a broken system.
Totally. I know it's easy for you listening right now to just take water for granted. I mean, I do it too.
We all do. You turn the handle, water comes out, you don't think about it.
Right. But the scale of the impending crisis and the ingenious ways engineers are trying to save it are absolutely fascinating. Okay, let's unpack this. Where do we even begin to diagnose a system this massive?
Well, we begin by looking at the sheer volume, right?
Yeah.
And the hidden stress. Behind every glittering city skyline is a water network under immense constant pressure.
Just astronomical amounts of water.
Exactly. Cities consume massive amounts of water daily. We are talking about millions of gallons pumping through homes, hospitals, industrial complexes, public spaces.
And it never stops.
Never. But the alarming reality detailed in our sources is the sheer volume of what they call non-revenue water.
Non-revenue water. So water that doesn't make any money.
Right. This is water that a city spends millions to source, pump, treat with chemicals, only to lose it to underground leaks before it can ever be used or billed.
It's like trying to run a really high-tech modern smartphone, but you're using a degraded leaking battery from 1999.
Well, that's a perfect analogy.
Right. It doesn't matter how amazing the city looks on the surface if the underlying power source, the water infrastructure, is just dying.
Exactly. And the costs of that dying battery are huge.
Oh, for sure. If you've ever had a boil water advisory text sent to your phone or, seen your local water bill spike 20% in a single year, you are directly paying the price for this invisible loss.
You're paying for the water that went into the dirt.
Yep. The sources paint a pretty bleak picture of the immediate risks if cities just maintain the status quo.
Yeah, the risks are dire. We're looking at highly unreliable water supplies the second a drought hits.
Which are happening more and more.
Right. Plus plummeting resilience against natural disasters and really polluted coastlines, because untreated urban runoff is just flushing straight into the environment.
Which is just awful. And those skyrocketing costs for municipalities, they get passed directly to taxpayers, right?
Oh, always. Because cities are forced into these really expensive emergency measures when the primary system fails.
Right, like buying water from somewhere else at a premium.
Exactly.
Yeah.
But the core issue driving this failure, it begins with the physical infrastructure itself. We are largely relying on systems built decades ago.
I sort of picture it like a cardiovascular system, but with incredibly high blood pressure.
Okay, yeah, that makes sense.
You have these ancient, brittle arteries, right? These 60-year-old steel or iron pipes underground. And because of massive population growth, we're pumping a higher volume of water through them, just faster and harder than they were ever designed to handle.
That analogy hits the nail on the head. When those ancient, brittle arteries sit underground for half a century, they experience these constant microstresses.
Like from the traffic above?
Traffic, sure. The soil shifts, temperatures fluctuate, the metals corrode. Eventually, an artery bursts.
Like a massive water main break.
Right. Or more commonly, it develops thousands of tiny fissures.
Yeah.
Just leaking everywhere.
And you can't just dig up the entire city.
No. Replacing every single pipe beneath a major metropolitan area is economically impossible. So we are quite literally pouring municipal budgets and purified water right into the soil.
Wow. And population growth, you know, it isn't just about needing more water to drink. It fundamentally changes the physical landscape of the city itself.
Yes. Rapid urban sprawl means we are paving over massive tracts of land with concrete and asphalt.
Just sealing the ground up.
Completely. The physical footprint of a city fundamentally alters the hydrological cycle.
Because the rain can't get into the ground anymore.
Exactly. Historically, rain fell onto open soil, naturally seeping down to recharge underground aquifers. It was a very slow, filtered process.
Nature's filtration system.
Right. Now, water hits impermeable pavement. It has nowhere to sink.
Mm-hmm.
So it rushes across the surface, picking up oil, heavy metals, trash.
And then it just overwhelms the storm drains.
Exactly.
I've actually noticed this in dense neighborhoods. When it rains, especially in areas where, like, rapid growth really outpaced city planning, the streets flood almost instantly.
Oh, yeah. The water becomes a hazard instead of a resource.
Right. The sources highlight this dynamic heavily when looking at informal settlements or rapidly expanding urban fringes.
Which is a huge issue globally.
Yeah, because these areas often spring up without proper drainage or sanitation infrastructure in place.
Right. When you have high density without a way to manage the runoff, the water pools.
It creates severe health hazards.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And dramatically worsens local pollution. It's a compounding problem.
And this entire situation feels like it's being pushed to the breaking point by climate change.
Oh, it's the ultimate stress test.
The weather is acting as a massive multiplier for all these infrastructural failures, isn't it?
It is. The hydrological cycle is essentially on steroids now.
Yeah.
We're dealing with extreme unpredictability.
Right. The historical data is basically useless.
Exactly. Cities used to rely on historical weather data to manage their reservoirs. They knew roughly when the rainy season would start, you know, how much it would deliver.
But now?
Now we're seeing prolonged, multi-year droughts followed suddenly by concentrated, overwhelming flash floods.
Which the ground can't absorb anyway because of the concrete.
Exactly. When rainfall is that erratic, maintaining a steady, high-quality water supply becomes an absolute logistical nightmare for city planners.
And the pain of that nightmare, I mean, it's not distributed equally. When the system is stressed, marginalized communities definitely bear the brunt of it.
Absolutely, they do. Limited access to safe, reliable water disproportionately affects lower-income neighborhoods.
Which just deepens existing inequalities.
For sure. From a macroeconomic perspective, this lack of reliable infrastructure slows down regional economic growth and significantly widens social inequality.
Right. A thriving city cannot exist if a huge portion of its population is constantly battling just for basic access to clean water.
No, it just can't.
So I want to push back on the traditional logic here for a second.
Okay, go for it.
If we have more people, right, and the weather is erratic, why don't we just engineer our way out of this the old-fashioned way?
You mean building our way out?
Yeah. Why don't we just build massive new dams, drill deeper boreholes, and just extract more water from the environment to meet the demand? Like, why not just go get more water?
Well, this raises an important question about the absolute limits of traditional engineering.
Okay.
Historically, our entire approach was supply-side management. If demand goes up, you go find more supply. You build a bigger dam, you build a longer aqueduct.
Right, the Roman Empire approach.
Exactly. But the sources are explicit that this approach is fundamentally dead today.
Mostly because you can't dam water that isn't raining down, right?
That's the main issue, yes.
Right.
Building a billion-dollar dam is completely meaningless if the climate is too unpredictable to fill it.
Makes sense. A dry dam doesn't help anyone.
Right. Furthermore, humanity has largely tapped out the easy, cheap sources of fresh water globally. We are over-extracting from our groundwater way faster than it can naturally replenish.
So we're just running a deficit.
A massive one. You cannot outbuild a drought by pouring more concrete, especially when the pipes carrying that water are leaking half of it away before it reaches the tap.
Wow. Yeah, that really puts it in perspective. So if finding more water is just a dead end, we obviously need a massive pivot.
A huge one, yeah.
And the source material introduces this concept of urban water renewal.
Right.
It's not a patch job. It's a completely different philosophy of how a city interacts with water.
It really is. It means shifting our focus inward towards optimization, conservation, and demand management.
So working with what we already have.
Exactly. It is a profound paradigm shift. For the past century, cities have treated water as a disposable commodity.
Like something you just use and toss.
Yeah. We extract it, clean it at great expense, pipe it to a house where it's used once, maybe to wash a car or flush a toilet, and then we just dump it straight into the ocean.
That is wild when you lay it out like that.
Right. Urban water renewal demands that we treat water as a highly precious, renewable resource instead.
It reminds me of the cultural shift we're trying to make with single-use plastics, honestly.
Oh, that's a good comparison.
For the longest time, we'd use a plastic fork once for like 10 minutes and then throw it in a landfill where it sits for 1,000 years.
And we didn't think twice about it.
Right. And we've treated our highest grade drinking water the exact same way.
We really have.
Urban water renewal is like taking that plastic fork, melting it down right in your kitchen sink, and turning it into a pleat. It's a circular economy where every drop of water is given a second or even a third life.
That's exactly it. Moving from a linear take, make, dispose model to a circular model. It's really the only mathematically viable way forward for expanding cities.
Okay, so let's get into the mechanics of how we actually pull this off.
Sure.
Because for you, the listener, a circular water economy sounds great in theory, but how does a massive metropolis actually execute it?
It sounds like a logistical nightmare, but there are ways.
The text provides a blueprint of 5 proven strategies, and the first is what we just touched on, right? Water reuse and recycling.
Yeah. So instead of discharging treated wastewater into a river or the ocean, cities are implementing systems to pipe it back into the grid.
But not for drinking, right?
Usually not. For uses that do not require drinking level purity. We're talking about watering public parks, running industrial cooling towers, or flushing toilets in massive commercial complexes.
Wait. But building entirely new pipelines to pump treated wastewater back into a city, that sounds incredibly expensive.
It's an upfront cost, sure.
Wouldn't it just be cheaper for industries to pump their own water from a nearby river or something?
Well, consider the economics of scarcity. Purifying water to human drinking standards requires immense energy and chemical treatment.
Right, it's a huge investment.
If a city spends millions to create pristine drinking water, only to pipe it to a paper mill where it's just used to wash wood pulp, that is financial suicide.
Okay. What if you put it that way? Yeah.
The sources highlight a fascinating, highly successful model in Durban, South Africa, actually.
Oh, right. They implemented a massive treated water reuse program, didn't they?
Yes. What's fascinating here is how Durban realized they could take municipal wastewater, treat it to a safe but non-potable standard, and sell it directly to local industries.
And they sell it at a lower rate than the pristine drinking water.
Exactly. So the industries save money on their utility bills. The city creates a totally new revenue stream from water they literally used to throw away.
Wow, so it's a win-win.
And crucially, they free up millions of liters of pristine drinking water for the residents every single day.
They match the quality of the water to its intended use.
Precisely.
That is brilliant. Okay, so if we are reusing the water already in the system, what happens to the water falling from the sky?
Stormwater.
Yeah. Historically, cities viewed stormwater as a nuisance, right? Like something to be evacuated immediately.
Exactly. Stormwater harvesting flips that script completely. Cities need to view rain as an asset.
Instead of a liability.
Right. Instead of funneling it into concrete drains that just dump into the ocean, urban design must capture and store it.
Here's where it gets really interesting.
Okay, materials.
Yes. The text outlines the physical mechanisms for this, like green roofs and permeable pavements.
This is such cool engineering.
It is. Normally, a road is just a solid block of asphalt, but a permeable pavement is engineered with this porous top layer over a deep bed of crushed stone.
Right.
It basically acts like a giant citywide coffee filter.
That's a great visual. The physics of it actually mimic natural soil.
How so?
Well, when rain hits the permeable surface, it trickles down. The crushed stone subbase traps the heavy metals and motor oil from the street.
So it cleans it as it falls.
Yes. The water is naturally filtered as it slowly percolates down to recharge the underground aquifers.
It solves the flooding issue and the water scarcity issue simultaneously, just by changing the materials we use to pave our streets.
It's incredibly efficient.
Okay, so we're harvesting rain and reusing wastewater. But what about those old brittle arteries we talked about earlier?
The leaks.
Yeah, the underground pipes leaking half our supply. How do we fix that without digging up every single street in the city?
This is where smart infrastructure and digital leak detection come into play.
Like smart grids.
Exactly. Cities are essentially giving their water grids a digital nervous system. They deploy acoustic sensors and digital flow meters throughout the entire network.
Wait, how does a digital meter actually stop a leak? It's just tracking data, right?
Well, it uses pressure differential analytics. Let's say it's 3.0 AM. A neighborhood's water usage should be near zero, right?
Right, everyone's asleep.
If the sensors detect a sudden, massive drop in pressure in a specific zone at that hour, the algorithms instantly flag an anomaly.
Oh, I see.
So the city knows exactly which block has a compromised pipe before the water ever even breaches the surface of the road.
That is so fast.
Repair crews can isolate and fix the exact location immediately. This drastically reduces the volume of non-revenue water lost to the dirt.
That is infinitely smarter than waiting for a massive sinkhole to swallow a car before realizing you have a leak.
Yeah, much safer too. Mm. And it also provides really granular data on consumer habits, which is vital for managing overall demand.
Right, you can see where the most water is being used. Okay, so moving to the fourth strategy, I really want to zoom in on this concept of decentralized treatment systems.
This is a big one.
Because we always think of city water as this hub and spoke model. Like, there's usually one giant centralized municipal treatment plant on the edge of town, and then thousands of miles of pipes radiating outward.
Which is very vulnerable.
Right. But the sources suggest moving away from this. Are we basically talking about creating off-grid water neighborhoods?
In a way, yes. It is a profound shift in urban planning toward modular resilience. Relying on one massive central plant is a critical vulnerability.
Because if it goes down?
If a superstorm floods that main plant or the main arterial pipe bursts, the entire city loses water.
A single point of failure.
Exactly. Decentralization means building smaller, localized, highly advanced treatment nodes for specific neighborhoods or maybe hospital campuses or new housing developments.
No, if one node goes down, the rest of the city just keeps functioning normally.
Modularity isolates the risk entirely. The sources emphasize how vital this is for rapidly growing areas or informal settlements, too.
Why is that?
Because extending the massive centralized pipe network out to a new urban fringe, I mean, that can take a decade and cost billions
of
dollars.
Right, laying all that new pipe.
But conversely, you can deploy a self-contained, decentralized treatment system to a neighborhood in a fraction of the time. It immediately provides the sanitation and clean water that community desperately needs.
It's kind of like the difference between forcing everyone to rely on one massive state coal plant versus giving every neighborhood its own localized solar grid.
That's a perfect parallel.
Yeah.
It democratizes the infrastructure.
Which brings us to the fifth point.
Right, because none of these technological marvels matter without the final and perhaps most important piece of the puzzle, community-centered design.
Because sustainable change requires human buy-in.
Exactly. You can engineer the most advanced permeable pavement and algorithmic leak detectors on Earth, but if the residents leave their hoses running all day, the system still collapses.
Right. The tech can't override human behavior.
No. The technology is only as effective as the culture using it. This involves creating really transparent awareness campaigns.
Like educating people on where their water comes from.
Yes. And structuring financial incentives or tiered pricing that rewards conservation. And most importantly, ensuring local communities actually have a voice in how their water is managed.
When people understand the journey of their water and are actively engaged in protecting it, long-term conservation habits really start to take root.
That's the only way it becomes permanent.
Okay, so we have a clear blueprint here. We recycle wastewater for industry. We design streets that absorb rain like a giant sponge.
Yes.
We install a digital nervous system to catch leaks instantly. We build resilient, decentralized treatment nodes. And we design it all around active community participation.
That's the playbook.
So what does this all mean for you, the listener? Like, how does this invisible underground overhaul actually change your daily life?
Well, we connect this to the bigger picture. The most immediate impact is just systemic resilience.
Meaning less panic.
Exactly. When the inevitable drought hits, your city doesn't panic. You aren't subjected to extreme water rationing because your city has multiple redundant sources of recycled and harvested water keeping the baseline functioning.
And when a massive storm hits,
your neighborhood doesn't suffer catastrophic flooding because the green roofs and permeable streets are there to absorb and slow the impact.
And there has to be a massive economic benefit, too. If the city isn't constantly putting out emergency fires and buying really expensive imported water, those savings stabilize the municipal budget.
Which directly impacts utility rates and local taxes for you.
Right. You pay less.
And the economic stability goes even deeper than that. A local economy cannot function on uncertainty. Factories, server farms, restaurants, office buildings, they all need guaranteed water to operate.
You can't run a restaurant with no water.
No. So by securing a reliable water future, cities attract business and protect jobs. Furthermore, by capturing and filtering runoff before it hits the ocean, we foster much healthier local ecosystems.
Cleaner beaches, cleaner rivers.
Cleaner environments for everyone. It ensures that reliable water isn't just a luxury reserved for the wealthiest zip codes, but a fundamental baseline for the entire metropolitan area.
Wow, we have covered so much ground on this deep dive.
It's a massive topic.
It really is. We started with the reality of an aging, high-pressure cardiovascular system of 60-year-old pipes just crumbling under the weight of climate volatility and concrete urban sprawl.
The bleeding system.
Right. But we've also decoded how a radical shift in philosophy, you know, viewing water as a highly precious circular resource rather than a disposable commodity, can actually save us.
It's totally possible.
By matching water quality to its use, engineering our surfaces to drink the rain, and decentralizing our massive grids, we can build cities truly equipped to survive the future.
The transition is logistically complex, there's no denying that. But the blueprint exists. And as the sources demonstrated with the industrial reuse models in Durban, the economics of it are already working in the real world.
It's already happening. I want to leave you with one final thought to mull over today. We talked a lot about the physical materials needed for this renewal, right? Permeable pavements, green roofs, decentralized local systems.
Right, the hardware.
Yeah. Think about what happens to the very nature of a city if it fully embraces those strategies. If we replace miles of rigid, suffocating concrete with materials that actually absorb and breathe.
A living city.
Exactly. If we top our skyscrapers with soil and plant life to hold rainwater, and if we break apart the massive, rigid municipal grid into localized, adaptable nodes, does the city of the future start functioning like a cold mechanical machine?
That's a profound way to look at it.
Does it start functioning more like a giant living sponge or a forest ecosystem? And if our infrastructure mimics nature that closely, where will the line actually be between the urban world and the natural world?
That is something to think about.
Next time you turn on that tap, take a second to think about the incredible hidden journey of that water and the massive living system we are trying to build to keep it flowing. Thank you for joining us on this deep dive. We'll catch you next time.